I'm Kathleen Holt. I'm here today with Donald R. Dunham of Copeland, Kansas. We're in Mr. Dunham's home, and we will be talking about his experience in the U.S. Army. Donald, would you go ahead and tell me who you are and what your birth date is and where we are today, just to inform the interview?
I'm Don Dunham, and I'm here at my home. And my birth date is 7/22/36.
Okay, have you lived in Copeland all your life?
All except the 2 years I was in the service.
Wow. So when did you go into the service? What year?
59, I think.
Uh-huh. How old were you then, about?
Oh, gosh. 59, I suppose I was 20, what, 2 or 3?
What made you go to the service?
Well, it was on a draft. I just came up for the draft.
Oh, okay, so you got the letter?
Yeah.
What'd your mother say? Were you married? Were you living at home?
No, we'd been married just a short time.
Oh, that must not have been pleasant. What'd your wife say?
She handled it pretty good. She was working in Dodge.
Oh, okay.
She worked for the unemployment office there.
Oh, okay.
So she stayed with that about the first year, then she moved to Oklahoma, Lawton, Oklahoma.
Oh, wow. For a job, or were you based there?
No, I was based there.
Oh, okay. So she got to go with you then.
Yeah, she didn't work while I was in the service, but she has ever since.
Well, she got good experience there,
I guess.
So tell me about getting the letter. What was that like and what went on there? Just describe that.
I don't really remember other than the big joke, you know, was you've been chosen by your friends and neighbors, you know. I don't know which one of the friends and neighbors chose us. But that's basically all I remember about it, other than I had to report in, catch a bus in Garden City. And we went to Colorado Springs. I can't even remember the name of that. Anyway, we started out there and was going to take basic there. It was only there, I think, 3 or 4 days, and they didn't have a big enough roster, so they flew us to Fort Hood, Texas.
Oh, wow.
And from there on, we took most of the basic at Fort Hood, and then after basic, I went to Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and we went through, I guess what you call cannoneer school. And, I don't know, I'd finished it out there. I was discharged from there.
Mm. So you were there the whole rest of the time?
Yeah.
And, And what was your job after that?
Well, they called, it was cannoneers. I drove a 27-ton tank.
Oh.
And they were actually a mounted howitzer.
Okay.
It shot a 155 projectile or shell.
Uh-huh.
And it was, it had its fun days.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. Some days enjoyed it, but basically, I guess my attitude was bad.
You didn't want to be in Fort Sill.
It wasn't all that bad, but, the only thing that kept Lawton on the map was the soldiers, and some of them, was real appreciative of it, of the soldiers, but some of them, there was signs where dogs and soldiers keep off the grass and that kind of stuff, but it wasn't all that bad, really.
So do you mean there were attitudes expressed like when you're in the store?
Yeah, but you know, you have them few in everything you do.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's just people.
Yeah. Huh. I want to back up just a little bit. You said you flew to Fort Hood. Was that the first time you'd ever flown? Or had you flown before?
Basically, other than just fiddling around here, I had a friend here that flew airplane, uh-huh. and a time or two there. But those planes that we flew from Colorado to Oklahoma were junkers. I mean, I think there were 3 plane loads of us, and 2 of the 3 planes had problems getting down, you know, wheels wouldn't come down or something wrong with them. And
really?
One of them come in on the foam. I was pretty lucky, I guess, the one that I was in and had no problems, but a couple of them had problems getting in.
Were they leftovers from World War II? Or?
I don't know what they were. They were military planes.
Huh. Goodness. And then what was Fort Hood like? What happened when you got there? What was the process?
It was just basic training, you know, was a lot of marching and dismount drill and, you know, just trying to get you in shape.
Mm-hmm.
And, we had a few classes. And then when I got out of that, was in Oklahoma, that was all pretty much a lot of it was classes. In fact, you know, there were times it was so hot that we had to set up camouflage nets, you know, and set in bleachers for classes because it was too hot to out in the old sun, you know.
Wow.
But we all survived.
Yeah. Were you in pretty good shape when you went, or was that tough?
Pretty good. See, I've been working on the rail rig here for Alvin Dave Laux, and
mm-hmm.
I wasn't fat and pussy like I am now.
When you went there, do you remember anything? Like, of course, Karen didn't get to go with you, but do you remember what the food was like, what the living in a barrack was?
Yeah. Oh, there was some of the food, you know, was kind of bad, but most of it was, you know, pretty edible. But the worst thing was they called baked chicken. And the old cook would take a chicken, you know, and set his legs up and take a meat cleaver and put it in half, and then he'd quarter that, and then he'd take the side of that cleaver and smash it, you know, and put it on a cookie sheet and throw it in a big oven, and a little more than warm it.
Oh, my gosh.
But it wasn't. Oh, no, I complained one day. I was on KP, and he said, well, the chicken they got wasn't any good, you know. Well, I took one home one time, and it was plenty good.
Yeah.
It wasn't cooked, you know.
But, oh, man. So you got KP duty then?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We had a first sergeant that had a little trouble with a duty roster, and every time somebody go in and complain and have a problem, why, he'd just start all over. Well, my name was pretty well at the top, so I'm pretty sure I pulled one of my share of KP.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no. Did you peel a lot of potatoes?
Yeah, but we had a potato peeler.
Oh.
But we got in trouble with that. You know, you're supposed to run, throw them in this. There's a big old stone bowl, and it spun around. And me and another kid decided to leave them in there so we didn't have to pick the eyes, you know. And they were pretty small when they come out.
New potatoes.
And I was in trouble with that, but The biggest thing for getting in trouble was cleaning the grease traps, you know, and under the sinks they had big old traps that trapped the grease before it went into the sewer system.
Uh-huh.
They'd get pretty bad, you know, that as much stuff as they had in, you know, washing dishes and stuff like that. It was not a real pleasant job, but usually somebody messed up enough that they kept them washed out pretty good.
I see. Did you ever get latrine duty, or were you always in the kitchen?
Oh, yeah. And basically we did, because they always left a barracks guard, see? And you done all that in the barracks. We was all in Fort Hood. Most of the old barracks was those old wooden barracks, you know. They were just pretty much of a shell, you know. And the dirt blowed through them when it was. But then when we got in Fort Sill, Oklahoma, they had brick. We had like four batteries and a service battery in one building, one big building, and then that was all one mess hall. And that was probably the worst KP, because, you know, you had, it lasted about all day.
Yeah. So then you would have classes, or you would have marching, mm-hmm. or I assume firing, did you?
Yeah, we had, you know, you qualify with a rifle, and we had, as long as we were in basic, you know, it was mostly just rifles, and some of them took pistol deals, but most generally it was the M1 rifle, and that's all I had done. I wasn't really a gun, care much about a gun, and still don't. But, then when we got into Fort Sill, well, it was all those big guns, you know, mounted guns. And
mm-hmm.
We done, was in a school support outfit, and we done quite a few retirement. You know, we'd take, we had what, a towed gun and then these self-propels. And we usually take anywhere, usually 3 to 6 of them, you know, for one of those retirement parties, you know, and we'd shoot a volley of shells. And we went to Reese Air Force Base one time and done with 6 guns and 6 trucks, and done a retirement party for some old boy there. But that was real good duty. The Air Force, you could go into the mess hall anytime you wanted to and get something to eat, and they weren't real picky about what you wore to town or anything like that. But you know, the Army, you didn't, they were not in favor of you splitting up your uniforms, you know.
Uh-huh.
And if you wore shorts, you wore a short sleeve shirt or whatever, you know, that was with that part of the uniform. But the Air Force, they didn't care. They were pretty lenient. And so, I don't know. I know I had a flat tire on my truck, and I went in to get some patching, and he says, "We don't patch them in here." He showed me a new tube and you put her back together.
Oh, wow.
So I suppose that was on account of the airplanes, more or less, you know, that you want to take a chance with a patched tube.
Yeah.
And so that just covered everything.
Huh.
And I guess that's the way it was all the way through. Air Force, I don't know, but that's pretty much the way it was there.
So were the Air Force and the Army base both at Fort Sill? Is that why?
No. They were just, Fort Sill was mostly artillery.
Oh, okay. But you had to go for this presentation, so you were at Air Force?
No, it was a retirement.
Oh,
see,
I see.
Took the guns, the big guns down.
Yeah.
I suppose the Air Force didn't have that kind of equipment, you know,
yeah.
for a shoot-off or whatever.
Huh.
But we just, when it was what they called TDY, you know, it's temporary duty, we went over one day and I think stayed 2 days and back the next day. And it was in a, you know, a convoy of...
Okay. So tell me, how did you get the job that you had? So did you get that at the end of basic or after that? How did they know where to send you and what to what duty to assign?
You know, I don't really... really know, or you know, I mean, it just kind of happened, I guess. But I started out I was a truck driver, I drove a truck, and then of course I had a driver's license, you know, for the trucks and the tanks and Jeep or whatever, and I could drive any one of the vehicles. I drove for the captain for off and on. I was a relief driver, or whenever his driver was gone, I'd drive him. But and then, on some of the deals, you know, where they took truckloads of troops somewhere and that kind of stuff, I drove a truck. And then, and I drove I was a assistant driver on a tank with. And then he was, he got out, you know, his time was up, and then I took over that tank.
So,
every place one of those tanks went, as long as you was in the, you know, kind of motor pool area or about that area, somebody had to walk in front of it. And so that's kind of where I got started, I guess, was leading that. Through the motor pool, and then, of course, we had to help with the maintenance and stuff. You were pretty well schooled on it before you ever started driving them. And
now they walked in front because they couldn't see was in front of them.
And, you know, make sure I wasn't going to run over somebody or something.
Oh, yeah. Huh.
And if it was very far, well, a Jeep was in front. Now, when we went out to the range, there was a Jeep leading a convoy of them, and both ways, and it was...
Do you have any idea what those tanks were worth at the time?
The price tag was all over them, but I don't remember what it was.
Huh.
I really don't.
I wondered about that. What about the shells and things like that? Well, I mean, when you went out and on a firing range, was that...
A lot of that was old ammunition, you know, 53 model ammunition. A lot of it was in 53, but...
Okay.
And I suppose that they was using up a lot of it. I don't know, but... See, they had an ammunition dump right there.
Oh, okay.
And... I did haul some ammunition out of there too, but the sheep herders around there kept their sheep in there. They keep the weeds and the grass down. You know, they couldn't mow or anything in that deal, but.
Oh, yeah.
They pastured it with the sheep.
Wow. So you really, by 59, was there talk at all yet about Korea, or that was kind of passing? Was Vietnam an issue yet?
Yeah, not really. Mostly it was Korea. And we thought the outfit was going to go before I got out. And I don't know, it was, of course... It's the worst place in the world, I guess, for rumors, but, I mean, it was rumored that we was going to ship, you know, right away. And and we never got any more word from it. But we were also in a, you know, what they call a strike outfit, and we had 72 hours to load everything on a rail car and be ready to go. And so we, you know, had to put all those tanks on rail cars and pack your duffel bag and put them in those canisters, and everything had to be ready. And we'd done that about probably every 3 months, and of course it was all kind of a, nobody got too excited about it because they didn't think it was really the real thing, but if it had been, we was ready to go. I mean, it was all done, you know, the way it was supposed to be. And
about how many men in that unit?
I don't have it. Huh. You know, that we had to see our, like A battery was split, and we had the drivers and pretty much maintenance in the firing part of it. And then we had the FDC, or Fire Direction Center, which is, you know, in the other part. And each one had a had an FDC and a firing deal.
Okay.
And then they had an FDC forward observer deal, you know, that I think they had their own. Seemed to me like they had one whole battery of that same stuff, but you know, basically they went out and found where it needed to be, and a lot of the time we would probably have been anywhere from 5 to 7 miles from the actual action.
Okay.
And we'd shoot over the troops, you know, the ground troops. And,
okay. So FDC, is that like the person that's going to decide, what'd you call that?
Fire direction, or
okay. So was it behind you or in front of you, or both?
They'd front of us. Yeah, they'd go up there and calibrate all this, and then they'd call back to the guns, and we'd set our sights and fire. Usually, fire one round, you know, to for location, and then they'd fire the whole bunch or whatever.
Okay. And then how did you know if you hit it?
They had an FO, you know, or a forward observer that
okay.
He was up far enough where he could see what was.
Okay.
And he'd call it back to FDC, and they'd compute it, and then they'd call it back to the tanks.
Okay. Was there a computer involved in that?
No, no computers at
that
time.
Just kind of manually?
Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
In fact, your telephones was the old, you know, you had to, it was the old crank phones.
Uh-huh. And what was your specific job then? Did you drive the tank so
yeah.
you weren't loading the...
Well, you know, I'd have to help load it, you know.
Uh-huh.
I mean, load it. We had a Lazy Susan type thing in the back, and then underneath, well, there it'd hold, I don't know how much it hold, but quite a few. And We just load whatever that activity, you know, required for. I mean, if they wanted us to shoot 6 or 10 or whatever, and you'd take those shells and lay them on a tray and pull them apart, and then they had bags of powder inside of them. And what FDC would calibrate the distance. And then they'd call back and tell us to either shoot a 3 or a 7 charge. And you'd pull out, if it was a 3, you'd pull out the difference, you know, and they were all stringed together, and tear that off and put it back together and just shoot that.
Hmm.
And then they had a fuse that you would set. You had either time delay or air burst or whatever you wanted. Whatever they was thought was efficient or they wanted. It was, I'm sure it would be with modern, you know, communications and stuff, it'd be a total different deal. Mm-hmm. The days before I got out, why that was what I done was, we had the old cast iron tanks, we weighed 27 ton combat loaded, and they'd come back, they came out with a new aluminum deal by the time I got out, and so we run a comparison races, you know, over the hills and loaded and unloaded and that kind of stuff. And the aluminum ones, you know, was so much lighter and so much faster, but they did have a little problem with keeping them together, you know, aluminum strip out or break mm-hmm. out, because they were rough, they were full track. And they were rough riding, you know, but kind of shake themselves to pieces.
Yeah. Tell me about inside where you drove. What was that space like? Large, small, crowded?
Oh, it was, everybody had there was a seat for the driver, of course, and then one for the gunner. And then there was probably an 8-foot circle in the center of the turret where you had guys, maybe, I don't know, usually two guys, I think. One guy was loading and one guy was, you know, putting whatever they needed in the shell. But on them, they were all just a kind of an automatic, what you call a breech, you know, you just shove that shell in there, and of course it would recoil back, so you wanted to get out of the way of it, but then it would kick the shell back out and just the shell casing. Mm-hmm. And it would, but the cannon, can't even think of his name now, but he would had a hand wheel, and they would set aiming stakes out, and he would look through this periscope, and he would turn this the top part of the track till those lined up, and that's how he got his. He'd set his coordinates on this periscope, and then he'd traverse that till they lined up, and that's the way they got the location where they were going to shoot.
Wow.
But that was one of the first jobs, you know, when they got in, was to zero that in and set those stakes. You have to set two stakes, you know, out, oh, I don't know, probably 30, 40 feet out in the front. Of course, I'm probably pretty sure that if in a combat situation, you're probably just shot.
Yeah.
And we had some of that where you'd look down the barrel, see, and he would pick the target and then mm-hmm. just shoot. But that would have been a more or less a direct. Right in the middle of a situation, you know.
Yeah.
But most generally, we were way back behind the troops and shooting over.
Yeah. Huh. After you left, so what happened toward the end? How did you know you were going to be done and get out?
Well, I didn't really. I had put in for an early out to help Dad harvest, and I had done give up on getting it, and I was out in the field when the old man's Jeep come out and got me and told me that I had 8 hours or something like that to clear the post, so I had to go around, you know, and make sure I didn't have something checked out at the auditorium or someplace like that, clear all that, and then of course had to go through a physical, check your ears and everything, make sure that, and of course he said that my ears was good, not put anything bigger or smaller than my elbow in them, and I don't think that was right, but I was anxious to get out. I wasn't going to create any problems, but now I wear these hearing aids and still can't hear.
Is it from the sound of the
Oh, I suppose some shells, of it, but then, you know, beating on pipes and stuff in the years after I got out, you know.
Yeah.
Because I went to work for Dave and Alvy. Well, I worked for them before I went in, and then when I got out, I did for a while. And then my brother and I, well, I guess my brother bought them out before I got out. Mm-hmm. And then he decided he wanted to be a school teacher, so he went to being a school teacher or went to college. And I'm still here, I guess. Of course, I don't do anything now, but I've got that heart trouble. Mm-hmm. I don't do nothing. I only sit around here. I go to the shop every day. Mm-hmm. The shop's only a block over. Mm-hmm. And cafe most days. Mm-hmm. You got to go down there and see what's going on.
That's right. You do. Yeah. Did you use any of the things that you learned then, back in the drilling business?
No, not really.
Not haven't had occasion to fire a howitzer?
No.
No. So what did Karen was on base then? She had 8 hours too? Or?
She was in an apartment uptown there.
Oh, so okay.
I had, you know, more or less lived off post.
Uh-huh. But at least you didn't have to clear that in 8 hours.
No.
Yeah.
No, that was, it was, where we were living was a pretty nice little duplex, you know, and there's always somebody looking, you know, for the, there were one, the first one we lived in was a little bitty, I guess it's one room, as I remembered. I know if anybody come to eat with you, you had to pull a table out of a kind of corner to get more than two set of table.
Wow.
And of course the bedroom and bathroom, but mm-hmm. And then a friend of mine was, they were living in, actually it was Karen's friend too, but they were living in this duplex, and it was originally like new. It was really a nice place, and so we moved over there and stayed there till we was out of there.
Mm-hmm. About how long was that?
I don't know, better part of the 2 years, you know.
Wow.
Of course, I don't remember how long.
Did you make it back for harvest?
Yeah. Huh?
Did you make it back for harvest?
Yeah.
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 Wow.
Yeah, I got back here in time to help harvest, but.
So then you were out, right? That was just your 2 years?
Yeah, well, we had a summer camp.
Okay.
See, I had it was 2 different years we had summer camp, and I went to Guernsey, Wyoming the first year, and of course, my granddad died while I was up there, so I got out of that a little early. And then the next year, I went up there to see to check in, you know, with the guy in Dodge. He thought maybe I could just fill out some papers, and so I didn't have to go the second year.
Huh. And so you had 2 years reserve?
4 years of reserve.
4 years of reserve. Huh.
2 years in, every 2 years I was active, see, and then 2 years is basically was inactive, and all you just had to go to meetings every every 2 weeks or something like that.
Oh, okay.
And that's what I filled out this deal was, they wouldn't pay mileage that far, because I had to go either Dodge Garden or Liberal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got exempt pretty much from that.
Huh.
And then some situations, I guess they had to go to summer camp, but I didn't.
Huh. So let's see, if you got out active in 61 and then you were 4 years beyond that, right? Mm-hmm. 65. Was Vietnam ever an issue in that time period?
Not really, I don't think, you know.
Okay. And you couldn't get drafted again, I suppose.
Yeah, as long as you was in reserve, you could.
Oh, okay. So they could have called you out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. Did you keep in touch with any of the guys that you served with?
Well, I did for, was, there was a, one kid from Hoxie that we met in Garden City, you know, as was going in. And, of course, see, they pretty much, in basic, or when they formed a battery, why, they done that alphabetically.
Okay.
And his name was Shepherd, so we were, he was in service battery, and I was in A battery, but he was all in the same building, and he spent a lot of weekends there at the house with Karen and I. And he got out. I hauled quite a little bit of material for the weld rig from Kearney, Nebraska. And I stopped up there seeing him then, but I haven't seen him now, and I don't know how many years. But I was up there here about a month ago. No, it's been longer than that, but we were right in Hoxie, and we tried to find him, and he wasn't in town, I guess, because we never did land him. But one of his boys now owns a drilling company in Hoxie.
Oh, and wow. So, he might have been influenced by you. He might have been influenced by you.
Well, I doubt it, because I never did know his boys, you know, that they grew up, and him and I kind of went our separate ways. And I'd like to see him, you know, now, but this guy that originally had the drilling company, well, he we usually meet every year at the convention, you know, and he'd kind of keep me clued in as to what was going on up there, but I didn't go to convention last year, probably won't go this year.
Were you active in either American Legion or VFW, anything like
American
that?
American Legion, yeah, but you know, they've got dates, you know, and so I wasn't actually, I was associate member for several years in Legion, and which didn't make any difference in what you done or how you done it, you just didn't get credit for the year you was in there. And now they've changed that, and so I've been a regular member for, I don't know how many.
And why was that? Was it combat required or something?
I don't know really what the reason was, but it must have been or something like that, because there's several of us, not several of us, two or three of us that was never overseas or involved in combat that was associate members. But.
Let's see.
But I've been a full-size member until the last year. I haven't really done my share of it. I've had this, I just ain't any good. I haven't much of anything on it.
Tell me this, when you look back over your whole life and your career and stuff, how do you describe that period of your life? How do you feel about it now?
No, I don't know. I, you know, it was a duty that I don't think anybody had ought to fight it. I mean, when it's your turn, go do it. And it wasn't, you know, a lot of complaints about, you know, what it does, but other than I don't feel that it was a loss of time necessarily, and yet it's, you know, been, it was an experience. And I think a lot of these young guys that are out here on the streets, you know, creating problems and doping and all that kind of stuff, if, of course, they've changed it so much too, but they could do a lot of growing up in a, you know, during a, in a season. And of course, a lot of them come back out of there mad at the world, and but you know, it's just like these, you know, every day, boy, there's something going on, you know, and this cop, you know, that just shot that young boy there, it's going to cost the country how many million dollars, you know, and they're, it's an excuse, it looks to me like, because there's those people coming in from all over the world, you know, protesting that. And that's getting to me. I mean, that seems a little like the people that we've been trying to help, you know, that are just coming in there and creating problems. And I don't know. I'm really not in favor of, you know, fighting locally. I mean, we're, that's what's happening in these foreign countries. They're fighting one another. Basically, that's what we're trying to do here.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned growing up, a time to grow up. Is that what you feel like in your life that kind of contributed to that and helped that?
Yeah, I mean, it.
Yeah.
You do some heavy thinking and...
Uh-huh.
And, of course, you're away from home. It's a different environment, you know. And but, yeah, I think it's... Then, you know, the discipline was a lot tougher. Now, right now, you know, I know of one situation where they felt like the discipline was too rough and they got him out of the service. And... we had some guys that was that couldn't, what they said, they couldn't adapt, you know. And true enough, they couldn't. We had, I know we had one guy there that in our outfit, he wanted to stay in so bad that, you know, he was wanting in the Army. And in fact, I think he'd volunteered. But he had a real nervous situation, and then he'd chew his fingernails so far back they'd bleed at night while he was sleeping, you know. And they tried everything, and he'd wear gloves, he'd tape them up, everything else, but he just couldn't get over it. They finally let him out, but he was kind of heartbroken over it because he wanted to be in the Army. And it was... it was something that I suppose over the years he might have finally got it quipped, but the Army wasn't gonna put up with it or try to. They didn't have any facilities for it, you know.
Yeah. Were you ever like homesick for here? Was it enough of a contrast?
Oh yeah, everybody gets homesick, I'm sure, but. Of course, we hadn't been married very long when. But one time, I know I rented a car and come home on a long weekend, and of course I had some couple of buddies that wanted to see Boot Hill, so they all shared in the car rent, you know. But
How did you communicate in that time with your family? How'd you keep in touch with what was going on back here?
Oh, maybe just phone calls with Karen, more or less.
Okay. So once you were at Fort Sill and she lived down there, you mentioned that you had come back once with your buddies. Did you come back very often?
No.
Okay.
No, it was about a 300-mile drive, I suppose, or something like that, but it wasn't really long on case, you know, and like some of the kids probably nowadays, but after she moved down there, well, then it was no problem, you know, never.
Yeah.
But her mom, you know, of course, we had to bring the baby home every once in a while, and so she'd help out with the finance of the trip, because she said it was cheaper for us to come home than it was for her to come down there. So.
Ah, good. Yeah. So were phone calls, long-distance phone calls, outrageously expensive, or you were able to make them once in a while?
No, they were. I don't remember, but, you know, it was all payphone most generally, and pocket full of change, but I don't really remember what it cost.
Okay. Tell me, were there any stories, funny stories, things that happened that you remember? And I'm thinking specifically about the armadillo. Tell me about that.
Yeah, like I say, it was that fire guard, you know, the fire guard. And until you was qualified with a rifle, he carried these wooden rifle. And just, you know, walk around there, and then that thing following you, and it's rattling along there, and it's dark and quiet, and it was a little spooky, but...
So you're out by yourself walking a perimeter of some kind?
Just walking around the barracks.
Okay, with your wooden...
But see, those barracks wasn't very far apart, and each barracks had a fire guard that was walking around.
Oh, okay.
And then, of course, it was up to us to get the troops up the next morning, you know, and get them to go on. And those, our barracks, top half of it was all U.S. Army, which is drafted. And I think there may have been one of them that was a RA, but most of them were draftees. And then the bottom part was those Puerto Ricans. And you really get some jabbering when you start getting them out of bed in the morning. You know?
Oh.
And most of them, you know, they jabbered their own language. We couldn't understand that, but, yeah.
So how long was your night shift then?
I don't remember. We seemed like it was all night, but I know it wasn't, because, you know, even when we got into regular outfit, well, your guard duty was, I think, 2 on and 4 off, but... This probably was the same thing. I don't remember. Mm-hmm.
So tell me what happened this time. You heard somebody or something coming behind you?
Well, that was this armadillo. You could hear him rattling. And like I say, every time I looked back to see what was back there, wasn't nothing there. But he'd kind of wait on you to turn the corner, and then he'd catch up again.
He was just keeping you company, huh?
Yeah, I guess.
Any other stories you remember?
Oh, not much of any.
Yeah. Well, if you've talked a little bit about how you feel about that time, if you, what kind of lessons do you think you took away from that period, and how might those have influenced your life?
Oh, I don't know. It was just time to grow up, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But, of course, you know, I was older than a lot of them, too.
Mm-hmm.
And so I suppose that made it quite a little easier. Plus, Plus the fact, you know, we kind of grew up on a farm, and we didn't have, you know, we didn't have extra money until we got old enough to work out, and which we did pretty early, you know, as soon as we was big enough to run a tractor. Well, we worked for neighbor farmers, and like Alvie and Dave, and Jack worked for them too. Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's just growing up, you know. Mm-hmm.
Did you know?
It was time, you know. I got married, and we had to figure out something.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, come then when you get out, well, you know, you got nothing. You got to start scrounging used furniture and find an old place to live and a job. And of course, my job was waiting on me, so I didn't have a problem with that. But and I think most of the places was, you know, I think if you had a job when you went in, or you had a job when you got out. And